Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of the Disc Golf Answer Man. I am Bobby Cool, Daddy Slick Breeze. I have with me my amazing co-hosts, Eric Oakley and Robert McCall. We're here for April 4th. Monday for a fantastic episode. We appreciate you guys tuning in, downloading, listening, subscribing on your favorite podcast app. But also, even if you don't watch us on YouTube, head over to youtube.com/discgolfanswerman and subscribe. We are at 861.
This bag.
We have a Dynamic Discs Combat Ranger bag ready to give away to someone as soon as we hit 1,000 subscribers. So like I said, even if you don't watch the show, subscribe and we will get your name put in to win that bag and send it to you right away. Eric is needing the space. He needs to get rid of it. Get it out of his sight. So, but thank you to those who are subscribing and who are listening and to the people that are watching us right now. What's up? We got a few questions from the Google form. We're going to talk a little bit about grip and a little other things. And then Eric Oakley has a disc he wants to talk about that he's been trying out and really liking. Robert's going to talk about probably his kid or something like that. I don't know. Fatherhood, something. So
I'm an open book. Ask me anything.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So. Anyway, so let's do a quick check-in. So I'm excited. I got to go out and play some disc golf with my grandson, Eli. We went to Hickey Creek, but it had been the first nice day and probably the two or three days leading up to the Saturday we went out. It had been cold. So a lot of people had gotten out. And they're I kid you not, every hole had at least five people. And then there was quite a few of like groups of 10, just some herd disc golf. So we didn't get we played probably about seven or eight holes, and then we're like, man, this is just kind of taking too long just for the two of us. So we left, but it was fun times. And I got to throw some of the discs that Eric Oakley had sent to us. I really love the Berg, loving the Exodus and the Dynasty. I completely forgot about the Alpaca, which was seems weird, but I forgot I had it in the bag. And so I didn't get to try that one, but I was really liking the other ones. I really liked the straight flight of the Exodus. Cause that was the one you gave me the 168, right? A little bit lighter weight.
Yeah.
So which worked out perfectly. Even Eli was like, wow, that threw really good for you, Papa. So I was like, yeah. So he liked it too. He got to throw it as well. And Robert, you said before we started recording, you said you got to throw some of the discs. What were your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I threw them in the field back behind our house. I thought that when we had talked about the Berg, I told Eric this before the show. I thought that when we talked about the Berg, he said it was a similar stability to the Cenus, but I had misremembered. It's more of a similar glide to the Cenus. Especially at the end, it just falls out of the sky. It was really interesting.
I've never seen a disc fade this way.
Fade down. what is this? Yeah. But it was really interesting. I think it could be really good as just a true approach disc. I mean, you're not throwing it over 200. It's going to be like, yeah, I'm inside. I'm between one and 175. I'm just going to flick my wrist and it's going to sit right there. So,
and you can throw it hard. Like, I think that's the best part about it. Like, you don't have to be like, I don't want to throw it too far. You can't throw it too far. It's like,
yeah, you can,
it's like
you can get on it.
Yeah. You can just pop into it. It's not really going to fly that far. You're like, oh, I might've thrown that too hard. And it just always checks up nice.
Is the Berg, the Berg was the white one that you sent us with the little thumb track in it.
Yeah.
Cause I was throwing that like 400.
Wow.
I don't know about
my face, I guess.
Was your shoulder hurting or something, Robert?
I'm a little sore. Okay. I played a lot of pickleball.
Yeah, no, he was thrown into a strong headwind.
So that's weird. I was like, I don't need any more drivers. Just throw the Berg. Only the Berg.
Oh, that's funny. The Alpaca. Yeah, nice stable throwing putter. I thought that was a good one. The Exodus is probably the one I was impressed by the most.
I was liking that one.
Yeah, I was telling Eric, I've got some beat up old T-Birds that do that same thing. But if I ever lost one of them, replacing it would cost an arm and a leg. The Exodus basically just does that, you know, for like a retail cost. So that was pretty sweet. And then the Dynasty, I think it's going to be great.
For retail costs, you get the same flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you can. Oh, look, for instead of spending four times that,
right,
you can just, you know, buy one disc right now. And then the Dynasty I liked a lot. It's pretty overstable, like we said, in the iBlend plastic, but Eric said it's going to work in over time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Didn't get to like go play a course or anything, just threw out in the field and hung out with Shane Owen, but it was a good weekend. Played some pickleball on Sunday, and that was a blast. So we're chilling. Yeah, life's good.
Nice. I went and finally got to kind of just throw and play disc golf, like just without really thinking too much about it. So I don't know. It was really fun. Been working on my putt, as now that I feel like I can rip into shots and get after it. Like I have a little bit of soreness in the hand, but nothing to be alarmed about. I still should be smart. Like I'm going to probably go a little bit easier tomorrow with a practice round on Wednesday if the weather permits, but just try and ramp into it. I feel like I've got most of my throws out of the way and I know what I need to do. So I'm feeling really, really good. I went and filmed my in the bag today, and yesterday I'd started a new shorter series the disc that we were talking about, which you lost because we got a name for it at our morning coffee. It's the name of the series it's going to be EO and the discs you may not know.
That's too long.
It's going to be all. It works. It flows.
No.
Oh,
nope.
That's right. You were trying to think
call
of a series.
Call on the marketing team.
I already filmed it, so it's in.
No.
Or call I can the just dub it over.
He was busy. he was busy. He won't charge you his hourly rate for that. Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's good. I'm messing with you.
Dude, yeah. So it came out great, and they're really fun. I'll tell people. I did the Gateway Prophecy, which is a mid-range. The Birdie Supply Marvel, the putter, just came out. Really nice.
Birdie Supply?
The Birdie Disc Golf Supply. Birdie.
Like the one with the bee that's like...
Yeah, like the bird, but it looks like a bird head.
Yeah. Okay. Dig it. I didn't know they made discs.
Yeah, it's a putter. Dope. It's really good. Like an alpaca meets a warden. It's really nice. Pretty cool.
Speaking my language.
Yeah. It's really nice. The Lone Star Discs Mad Cat also was pretty sweet. And then the Wing It Stratosphere.
Wing It?
Yeah.
That's one I haven't heard of.
Dude, the swirls on that thing are nuts. That thing was glidey, pretty like on the understable side, but like, you know when you get a good glidey disc, you're like, oh, if I hit this right, it's going to go forever. And that's exactly what it was. It's just like... Oh, easy hyzer stands up and then just like peels. And I was just like, you're never going to stop flying, are you? It was nice.
That's so sick.
It's going to be a fun one. I don't think I'm going to bag any of those discs, but I want to keep doing reviews like that. Those are, you didn't even know one of the brands is making discs. You know of Lone Star Discs, I would assume, being in Texas. And then Wing It, you haven't heard of, but you heard of Gateways. But it's like using these discs are like getting small brands or smaller companies or just discs that people don't know from companies is going to be that cool, easy, quick reviews, like 5 minutes at most, just to kind of give people a quick thought on it. So, yeah, be sweet.
Excellent. All right, gentlemen, let's jump into the questions rightly. This one's from Sambi. Oh, yeah. Remember, guys, go to discgolfanswerman.com. Submit your...
That is not... You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
When do I ever use words for their intended use?
That's fair.
Yeah, go to discgolfanswerman.com. Submit your disc golf questions. We will get them on the air. Sambi wants to know, I can throw a putter around 250, but my max backhand with any other disc is about 300, and it's hard to get past 280. Is it nose angle or something else? A forehand, I can get out to 300 easily, and with distance drivers, about 350 to 400.
Oh, yeah.
So what is it? Nose angle or what? What's going on?
I think so. That's got to be one of the big main flaws that you're facing. If you're throwing the disc and it looks like it's rising the whole time, every time you throw it, you definitely have your nose angle wrong. Another thing that could be happening is you might not be generating enough spin and or acceleration for those faster discs, which could be from trying to generate that is why you're throwing those up. So there's a level of learning to build from your putters and then into your mid ranges and allowing that to then transition to your fairway drivers. And then you'll start naturally spinning the discs where your fairway drivers will want to spin for you a lot more than your mid ranges and your putters will. So I would try getting into it where you think just a little bit of wrist action to get that extra snap at the end, which might help the disc get a little bit more true flight. And when it comes to throwing forehands, it is definitely easier of an athletic motion to throw it farther. I would imagine you're not throwing a hyzer stand up 400, 350 forehand. You're probably throwing a flat to forced over 350 foot sidearm would be my thought. But I could be wrong. If you have a buttery sidearm that's hyzer flip that's that far, then just keep throwing sidearms. What do you got, Robert, as far as working that nose angle and or what do you think it could be? Could it be anything else?
More than likely, it is a nose angle. I think like you've already identified the problem. One thing that you might want to watch out for is when you're reaching back, make sure you're not reaching back too high. When you do that, it kind of causes you to swoop, right? So if you start up kind of by your ear, you're trying to get it down to the right spot. So then by the time it's going where it's supposed to, it's just really easy to finish that too high. Take it from someone who also has nose angle issues that, the best thing that you can do is work on pulling it as flat as you can across your chest. And then one thing that helps me a lot is leading with my elbow as much as I can. So like, I'm not trying to get my elbow to way out here before my wrist hits, but if I think that way, it gets me out of the rounding problem that can also cause some nose up issues. And so first of all, video yourself throwing, take a look at where if you see that disc is starting like that, I mean, there's your answer, but yeah, work on leading with that elbow. That helps me to keep the disc a little bit flatter. And then one more thing is I don't have a disc on my desk, but, you can move your thumb. Thanks. Dude, how sick if I really did have one though, and then I just grabbed it from anyway. Missed opportunity. Anyway, you can move your thumb. Like you don't want to move it excessively toward the rim, but maybe a little bit further toward the rim. Where for me, it's like where I'm pinching between my index and my thumb. I think that thumb placement can help get the nose down a little bit better. So, just some things to think about.
Follow through forward too. I've been watching coverage of the Tallahassee Open from 2019, and Johnny McRae's on coverage, and I wish him a speedy recovery and the things he's going through right now. But he has this incredible follow through on a lot of his shots. Like when he commits to a throw, he is so forward on his on that explosion that I think it really helps him with his angles, his lines, everything. It gets really difficult if you really follow through and exaggerate being forward to like really get that nose angle up, like it, because you're pushing over the top of it. So I've been thinking about it a lot more when I've been playing, and it is helping me immensely since I've got back into throwing. Like, you know, all I've been thinking about is throwing. So definitely go watch Johnny McRae throw a little bit. I don't think it just has to be Tallahassee, but you can probably watch any coverage of him, and it's fantastic. So,
yeah. One other thing to add to that is if you are trying to follow through more forward, think about when you hit your brace, like when your plant foot hits, think about pushing your weight from back to front, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's really easy to plant and just kind of spin on your foot, but not really get your weight forward. And that causes you not to follow through. But also, like if your weight's back, I mean, look how your body is. It's tilted backwards. So naturally, the disc is going to be a little bit nose up. So yeah, some things to think about for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Next question comes from Josh. I'm looking for an overstable mid-range. I currently have a verdict in that spot. I also bag a Justice. I also bag a Justice, but that is more of a utility disc. I'm looking for something that finishes a little harder than the Verdict, but not as much as the Justice. I am most familiar with a Trilogy plastic, but I'm not opposed to trying other brands. Since Eric has an open bag, I thought he might be able to recommend a few discs to try. What do you got, Eric?
So this is actually a slot that I don't use. I used a reactor from MVP, which is very similar to a verdict. And I actually didn't bag a verdict when I was with DD, just because I wasn't really reaching for it. But I had like an overstable EMAC truth in that same slot. So it's tough, but I'd have to look it up. The one I threw was from RPM. View our range of disks. Like you're going to be looking at these kind of more blunt mid ranges, like a Rock X3. That's not it. Flying disks. Why aren't you showing me anything? Okay. It wasn't Intia. Was it the Kotuku? It might have been it. Yeah, it was the Kotuku, Kotuku, from RPM, and that was really nice. Like it felt a little less glidey than a verdict does, but it handled power really well. I was able to kind of rip into it. Numbers are 5502. I'd put it a little bit more than that, like 5503 is what it feels like, maybe even 5403. That would be one that I would kind of lean on. I have seen Rock a lot X3, of players.
Just like you mentioned, is a good one too.
Totally.
It fits in that slot.
The only other one that I could also think of would be, what is it? Drone or Wasp? Like are also in the Discraft family that fit into that overstable slot. Pyro's, Sean, that's a good call, but the Pyro's weird. The Pyro has this weird, like, it looks like they took the top, I don't know, 60% of a fairway driver and then took the rest of the percentage as the bottom being a mid-range. It's very weird.
Interesting.
So, yeah. But, yeah. I think there's a lot of really good options. Kotuku being like an outside brand to give a try, you know, Rock X3 being something that's a little bit more streamlined. Yeah.
The Bobcat from Mint fits into that as well. Like one of their premium plastic Bobcats. It's more than a verdict and less than a justice, definitely.
Totally. That's a great call. Actually, I was using that in the approach disc videos and I really, I actually like that one.
It's a good one.
All right, so I'm excited. I know some people like to know about our pickleball stuff, and I'm excited to let everybody know that I got to play pickleball on Saturday, and it was amazing. Got to found out there's like, eight places that play pickleball. There's anywhere from like 9 in the morning till roughly 4:30, Monday through Saturday, you could find a place to play pickleball that's at least within 20 minute drive from where I'm at, which is amazing. So awesome.
That's awesome.
So I ended up going to a church, not a huge church, but a big church, but it has a pretty big gymnasium and it had three pickleball courts set up and they play, you can play there Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They have different times set up and they actually have beginner classes, which is really cool. So if you want to go beginners. So anyway, I went there, showed up, and there was about 10 people there. And I got to play a few games. And I got to, my body told me, hey, you haven't played this in a while. Your legs are hurting, and they're going to hurt for a little bit while you're playing. So anyway, but it was a fantastic time. So I was so glad to be able to play some pickleball. I'm going to play a whole lot more of pickleball. And I know Robert got to play. Now, you recently got to play like in a tournament, didn't you? Or no? Did I see that right?
Yeah, I did play a tournament. Sorry, I knocked my camera just a second ago. I played in the tournament with Shay and with Men's partner down here. We struggled in both of them. We came out really nervous. And if you guys are, if y'all are tournament players or if you've played competitive disc golf, you know what it's like to step on the first tee and just be like, oh gosh, what do I do? What do I do? And just freak out, you know, like that was us in both the men's tournament and the mix. So we struggled in that, but we played again on Sunday and kind of got our feet back under us. And we're playing another one sometime soon. I don't remember what weekend it is, but
nice.
Yeah, we're chilling. It was fun.
Yeah.
So we got to watch some pros play as well.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's just like in disc golf when you watch pros playing, you're like, we're not playing the same game.
Right. Yeah.
That's how it was watching them. Like, they do stuff that is just unbelievable.
Like, I feel like when I've watched a little bit of pro pickleball, it seems like it gets a little slow at times. But when the rally really gets going, when they're not like, when it's that little chips the net, like it goes like, you're like, all right, somebody do something. Can you do something? But that's like, you have to wait for somebody to make a mistake. And when it gets really intense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Their hand speed is insane. Like, I mean, we've watched them. So there's a place in Austin, well, just west of Austin, called Dreamland, where they have covered courts. And every Tuesday night, they're doing like a showcase event kind of thing. And dude, I'm telling you, they rip the ball at one another and then just kind of turn a shoulder down, just barely drop their hand and right back over. It's wild.
Yeah.
And just real quick, Alice reached out to me. Robert, I don't know if they told you, but May 15th, they're dedicating that the pickleball courts in Emporia.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. So, and then me, Alice, and Candace had donated some money to have our name put on a plaque so that we could have benches out there. So there's
supposed
to do all that. So that's pretty cool. Awesome. All right. So that's our pickleball talk catch up for you guys.
Did you put the bench in my name after donating the money?
No.
Why?
I mean,
Disc Robert, Golf Answer Man.
Bobby. Come on, man. No,
I could have done Disc Golf Answer Man. But you know, the thing is that people are probably thinking, why are you talking about pickleball? I bet you, if you looked in your favorite Disc Golf Pros Instagram, you'll find quite a few that actually play disc golf. In fact,
I saw
Katrina Allen playing some pickleball. And then recently I saw Tina had posted some stuff on her story playing some pickleball.
Yeah. I know Zach Milton plays a lot.
Yeah.
Calvin
plays a lot.
Zach. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, no, Zach's nobody's favorite, but you know, other players,
right. You might see him in other people's videos. So just be careful. Totally. Yeah. All right. Let's get back to some disc golf. This one's from Native San Diegan. Hey, DeGam fam.
San Diegans?
San Diegoans.
It says San Diegans. San
Diegans.
Vegan like Diegan. No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say vegan. Hey, DeGam fam. I got a question regarding trying to play through injury. I hurt my lower back a month ago, and lately when I play, it's sore for a few days. I've changed up my form to make it more compact and dialed back the movement. Think more Drew Gibson and less James Conrad. I hope a little less James Conrad if your back's hurting.
Yeah, goodness.
Are there any tips to focus on during the swing to help prevent injury or making it easier on the body? What exercises routine do you use to help recover? Thanks for all the great content. You guys are the best. Before we start answering, disclaimer, none of us on here are doctors. So any of this advice is just based off our experience and not anything as far as and what a doctor would tell you. So if you're having serious back injury, make sure you consult a doctor. That being said, what do you got for him, Eric?
So I I've had lower back pain before, and a big part of what I did was it was a lot in my glutes. So I got a foam roller, made sure I rolled out my glutes. You know, started working all the different areas, you know, sometimes before and mainly after rounds to help loosen everything up. And that really helped. It took a lot of time making sure I properly warmed up, making sure I properly cooled down to get it to where my back doesn't really get like that. Another thing that I do for recovery is Epsom salt baths. So I mean, it's one of the best things you can do. It's usually, you know, you're sitting in, it's on your lower back and in those places that help it recover. So I am a huge fan of Epsom salt baths along with foam rolling. It's probably the two things I do the most, but I do my Disc Golf Strong warm up every time before I play, every time before I'm going to throw, get out there and make sure I get after it. And that is a great way to also build it up. One thing that could be causing it is you might have weaker hip joints. So your other muscles in different areas are trying to help, and they're taking a lot more of the load that your hip can't bear. So getting a little bit more balanced and building your strength in your core and hips will be another thing that could also help in the long run. And that's what has helped me in keeping a lot of those injuries off and or subdued, if you will, because I definitely still get sore, but it's usually sore afterwards and I'm feeling pretty okay by the next day, if not ready to go.
Yes, that's the biggest thing I've learned from talking with and following some of Disc Golf Strong's program, is that our bodies are, and I've said this before, said this with other things, but the great thing is that our bodies are excellent compensators. The bad thing is our bodies are excellent compensators. In other words, like Eric said, if you're trying to adjust and make things and you're like, oh, that's not hurting my back, well, that's not necessarily solving the problem. You're just compensating. Your body's trying to figure out how to make it do what you're trying to make it do, and it may not actually be the best thing for you.
Yeah. I mean, to that end, I would answer it like this. If you're having lower back pain and it's because of disc golf, like, you probably shouldn't play disc golf. And I know that that's not fun to hear because everybody wants to play. I've played through injuries. And it just, in the long run, it hurts you, right? Like, I've added months onto recovery because I was stubborn and tried to play through it. So if I'm you and it's something like my back, and it's not just like, if it's a soreness, then there's probably something you could tweak in your form or, yeah, work on your flexibility, something like that. But if we're talking like nerve pain, like actual pain,
yeah,
I'm not playing disc golf with that personally.
Yeah.
Or pickleball or anything.
Or doing house chores. Forget house chores.
Yeah. By the way, my lower back is hurting. Yeah, so, right. So everyone let Shay know that I've done my chores.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, before we head to the other questions, Eric, talk about the disc that you are delighted for. That's what we're going to call it. Eric is delighted.
Eric's disc delights.
Disc delight.
Eric, I like that. Eric's disc delights.
That's that you don't know. Oh, that's already taken. You may not know. Shoot.
So this is just the Emperor from Infinite Discs. I have been throwing it more lately, now that I've been getting back into throwing distance drivers, and you know, before I hurt my hand, I was just absolutely sending these. And this is a Lester Metal Flake one, but I also throw the Swirly S Blend, and I cannot express it enough about how good this disc is. So I had the issue when I was with Trilogy of I kind of got to the point where I wasn't able to trust the Raiders that I had. I don't think that I was, I don't think that the Raider or anything is a bad mold. I just felt like I stopped being able to throw it with any confidence, and that's on me because I have thrown it absolutely amazingly plenty of times. So it just kind of got to that point where I would throw it and not trust it. And then I would make it hyzer out, or I would be like, made that hyzer out. And then I would turn it over too much. So it just got to the point where I couldn't trust the disc. So switching to a different disc in the Emperor was one of those things that helped. But what I'm seeing with this is there are times where I feel like I don't hit it right, or like I push it over a little too much. But for whatever reason, this kicks into another gear and really starts to peel itself out. And when it's peeling itself out from Anheuser back to flat, it like stays up in the air. So it doesn't ever lose that distance where I see a lot. Sometimes when I see some distance drivers, they go out, peel over to the right. And once they come back to flat, they like kind of keep falling as they're going to hyzer, where for whatever reason, the Emperor is just like here. And then once it gets to flat, it kind of pushes upwards in its gear and has that forward finish. I threw a Emperor today 470 feet, and it was never above my chest. Beeline, flexed over, stayed low, peeled out, kept flying. And it was in a tailwind, just a smash, but it was 470 feet, never above my head. And that's insane. Like, it's not easy to do. So I will say that the Emperor, I think, is probably one of the best distance drivers, and I haven't even mentioned it on a forehand. So, And it's, I think it's just as good, if not better, on a forehand. So it's been the disc that I think I have the Dynasty, I have the Pathfinder, I have all these discs that I'm super excited about, but I haven't loved throwing distance drivers for a while. And now I do. I absolutely do. So it's really, really fun.
You said 470 awesome. Feet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can kind of relate. That's how I was getting the Berg. Yeah, the Berg. That's awesome. You think you know me, Robert?
Yeah. When you said 470 feet, I literally could have finished your sentence for sure.
So yeah, I can relate. That's the berg. Just was, man, 470.
Alboro,
I think just, it was like 70-80% like of the power. Full.
Nailed it. It's like a 70% pull for me.
I was kind of, yeah, I didn't want to throw my shoulder out.
Were you guys roommates ever? Like,
Did we ever work together?
No. Hey, Robert,
did you guys ever like hang out? Did you guys, like,
oh, yeah, that was the thing. We would go to tournaments. Oh, people would ask Robert where I was. All right, Shay Stevens got a question for us. It's late in the round and you're feeling parched. You reach for your beverage for a drink. Is it Power Grip or Pinky Out?
I mean, this is important.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
I did ask for grip questions.
I think I'm power gripping. I'll pinky out like a cup of coffee. But if I'm going for my water bottle or something, it's like I'm getting hydrated.
Nice.
I think I always have pinky off. Like no matter what I'm drinking. I just picked up my Yeti and like my pink. Well, hold on.
That's because you're fancy.
My pinky's off of it. Yeah, I'm Mr. Fancy Man. That's me.
Mr. Fancy Man.
Mr. Fancy Man.
I'm disc golf
fancy man.
Yeah, that's right. That's me.
Great. Now it's going to be on your Facebook somewhere, I'm sure. Disc golf fancy man.
Disc golf fancy man. Maybe someone will drive by air horn me at a tournament again as well
and yell it out. Hey, fancy man.
Dang it.
Jason has a question. He says, are female players' ratings calculated identically to male players? So an 850 rated female player would be directly competitive with an 850 rated male player, regardless of the respective divisions restrictions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. In theory, yes. The way that they're calculated is exactly the same.
Yes.
The fields that they play against could obviously vary from time to time. So like the biggest variable in that is if the women at a certain tournament play entirely a different layout than the men. And entirely a different layout, I mean, even if they have one tee pad different or one basket in a different placement, you have to count that as a totally different layout, right? Mm-hmm. Which happens for the women's side a lot. When you do that, it changes the propagators. And by propagators, that's the people whose scores count toward the total. So, yes, they're calculated the same. No, they're not always calculated at the same time and on the same courses as men's, if that makes sense. In theory, an exactly 850 rated female player should be directly competitive with an exactly 850 mated.
Whoa.
850 rated male player. Yeah, in theory, they should be very competitive with one another.
Yep. Ratings are dumb. Just going to say it. But at the pro level, I think ratings don't need to have a thing. I honestly think at the amateur level, once you're on the pro tour, just who cares? Like, who cares? Let's give a ranking system. Let's move on from it. But it's definitely not a system that needs to go away completely. It's a system that should be in place so you know when you're ready to move up divisions and different things like that. I think it does a good job in that regard. So, I am joking.
At the pro level.
Okay, so let me push that. Totally, let me do a little pushback for you, Eric. Mm-hmm. I do hear pros say that. Not every pro. I'm not going to say every pro, but I often hear pros say that ratings are stupid. Is that? But I still, in the same vein, I hear pros say, that's one of the first things they look at is their rating, and then that's one of the first things they gripe about when the ratings don't seem to match what they think they should get.
Because it's a system.
But if it doesn't matter, then why are you getting upset? And I'm talking, I'm wanting you to answer for everybody. I'm not like trying to pick on you. Actually, I'm picking on
totally.
You.
Totally. So what happens is it's become this bigger thing of being, this rating has become this bigger stigma by the players, by the fans, and a big thing by the sponsors of they've put this emphasis on, like, there are some teams that, oh, you're not even 10-20 rated. Sorry, you're never going to make this level of tier of team. And it doesn't matter. You could have a great social media following. Doesn't matter. Like, if you're not playing at a level of this caliber, then sorry about it. Good luck next year, type of thing. And so that's why we have this importance on ratings. As players, we look at it as to oh, cool. Did I, what's high score mean, type of stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of times. And, it's something that I, as a going into this year to change mental game and so many different things, is I don't want to look anymore. I don't want to be tracking my rating. I don't care when the ratings updates are. The only thing I want to know my rating for is when I am supposed to sign up for tournaments that are tiered registration that aren't a part of the Pro Tour Pass.
Yeah.
That's all that that I'm really thinking about with my rating at this current state of things. So we do it because it's become natural, but we need to shift out of that, because if a system doesn't feel reflective, like, we as players start to understand what a 1,000 rated round feels like, what a 10-20 rated round feels like, what a 10-50 plus rated round feels like. We know when we play that level of golf. And sometimes, for whatever reason, this algorithm or formula can just be different. And I think the best example of this is that one of the best rated rounds was shot at Fountain Hills. And you're going to tell me a player shooting good at Fountain Hills is better than a player shooting good at Brewster Ridge, at Maple Hill, at even Winthrop, and those places, that round is 1130 rated? Or I think, is that what it was? Was that what Paul's was?
32, yeah.
Yeah. Absurd number, but he just threw a bunch of good hyzers and made putts. But if you were to say, take a person and put someone there where that course, the best score you could reach is 1100, I would argue that shooting 1100 on a tighter wooded course is better than shooting 1132 at Fountain Hills.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, so that's the same thing that people say about Macbeth's round at Maple Hill, like, yes, the 11-14 or whatever. Like, yeah, that's insane. It's a far better round than the one at Fountain Hills.
But by the ratings, it's not. So that's where the system becomes flawed, is because of the distances or the conditions or the people playing in the field, so on and so forth. The round at Fountain Hills is rated higher than Paul's 18 at Declo that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Al right. Brought up a question. Isn't that because ratings are compared to how the field played and not really the specific course?
Yeah, and I don't think
that's correct. It's based entirely on how everybody else played.
Yeah.
You cannot, based on the current rating system, you cannot have a rating if you went out and played a course by yourself. There have to be five propagators there, at least five, whose scores count toward the average and the median and all that they do.
Yeah. I just think the system has its issues. Any system would. Like, even when we've seen different ranking systems being tried to be implemented, there's been flaws within those systems. I remember placing in the top 20 of every Pro Tour one year and then playing poorly at Worlds. My world ranking was in the 60s. But a dude who played no Pro Tour events got 30th in Worlds, was world ranked higher than I was. So that system doesn't work. I think they've switched up that world ranking system from that system.
Sucks to suck, dude.
It does. It really does. But it's like, what was all this time on the Pro Tour for whenever I'm playing against the best players? I have one bad tournament. It happens to be Worlds. Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I suck, no. I guess. But we get to this point where it being a number that, you know, Ricky was the highest rated player, SportsCenter or Sports Illustrated article, and then it's talked about in all these different ways. But it to me, again, I just don't think he was out and out the best player in the field. He just played more rounds than everyone else did because he went and played. So he had his standard deviation was going to be a little bit easier for him to knock through. So I just, again, rating system is dumb. And I think us as pros need to care about it less, and or we need to find systems that allow for us to care about it less, like being guaranteed better signups for certain tournaments and stuff like that, rather than this rating based stuff. So gotcha. I don't know. It's all very weird.
So speaking of Paul Macbeth, maybe someone can kind of explain to me. I saw the article in Alter World. I didn't get a chance to read it, but what's this? Do you guys, are you familiar with what's going on with the Hall of Fame as far as Paul Macbeth? As far as his title changes,
I only know one minor thing. But what happened?
Well, it just says, go ahead, Robert, if you're familiar with it.
Yeah. So they've had people voted into the Hall of Fame while still playing before. Like Valerie Jenkins is one of those who got voted in while she was still touring. They put Macbeth's name up on a ballot, like he was nominated for the Hall of Fame, and didn't get voted in. I guess because people thought it was too early or whatever. After that, and he's 31 right now, after that, they changed the rule that you have to be at least 45 years old to get voted into the Hall of Fame. So not only will Macbeth not be a first ballot Hall of Famer, which is like, I mean, just the biggest joke of all jokes, he won't be in the Hall of Fame for another 14 years. I mean, like, what? So, yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything about it before I read that article. And to be fair, I don't know much about the Disc Golf Hall of Fame. I could tell you some Hall of Famers just because I know who they are. I've seen what they do. But yeah, to say that Macbeth doesn't belong in that group right now, I don't care about your rules. Like, that's stupid. I'm sorry to whoever made that rule, but like,
so, bro, but it's
like, if anybody, maybe not if anybody, but if there are, you know, like an elite group of people that deserve to be first ballot Hall of Famers, I mean, Macbeth is at the top of that list.
100%.
Now, according to the article, it says in other sports, current competitive players are rarely, if ever, voted into their respective Hall of Fames.
Yeah, and that's totally fine.
So the rule. So it sounds like maybe the problem was the rule wasn't set in place early enough.
That's correct. Okay, that's correct. It needed to be put in place before he was put on a ballot, or if they decided, if I'm on the committee, I'm saying this and I'm in there. If they decided that he wasn't going to be voted in, then the rule needed to change before that, not after it, because that's insane.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is what happens when you have an organization that is so removed from the things that are happening in real time. You've seen what the Disc Golf Pro Tour has been able to do by being on the ground and trying to make changes each and every year with the courses, with everything. They are continuing to advance things forward. The PDGA is in the back seat, just looking, trying to still tell you where to go when they're just backseat driving, when they're not up seeing that there's traffic or things like that. So we run into this issue where some of the people at the PDGA are also people on these committees and different things are, this is not their real job. Their real job is to do something else. So that's another part that I think is a flaw, is that they aren't giving this the proper amount of time that this could slip through the cracks. And now Paul won't be a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's we're in a place where the PDGA's scope is trying to do this when they need to shrink it and focus on what they're actually good at. I used a lot of analogies there. Sorry if they were confusing, but it's the only way my brain knows how to work sometimes.
All right. We got one last question. This is from Johnny. What grip do you use for putters and mids? I use a power grip on fairway and distance drivers, but more of a control grip for the other two. While it feels more comfortable due to the smaller rim, it feels like I can't grip tight enough and it causes wobble out of my hand.
I use both.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Eric. I'll follow up.
I do both. I fan grip and power grip my mids. I fan grip my putters, and I can power grip my putters, but I don't often do that because I would rather fan grip a mid if I'm thinking about power gripping a putter. So I'll just keep it that way and let the disc speed allow it to work. one thing, I have a really soft fan grip. It's the same as my putting grip, but I've just gone and done it, and it's the same grip I use when I play catch. So I've built into it to where I understand the timing. My grip is tight enough to where it's a really kind of open fan grip. It's like really open. Like this is, I mean, let me grab a mid range so it's a little easier to see. So on a mid, you know, it's still like, this is what my fan grip looks like. I am not, nothing's tucked. I'm very far fanned out. And I am really just thinking like playing catch with a frisbee, snap that thing forward, really accelerate the disc and let it go. I will even fan grip my fairway drivers sometimes too. So, if you're having issues with the tightness in the grip, you just got to go out and do it more. You got to build up those muscles to really feel it out. So, yeah.
I would be surprised if, maybe I'm just thinking of it the wrong way, but I'd be surprised if grip, like using a fan grip, is causing a disc to wobble. I think it's probably less about the grip and more about the off-axis torque.
Yeah,
because it can be masked a little bit easier by faster discs, by distance drivers and fairway drivers. So I very much doubt it's the grip. It's more likely that you're not matching those angles up properly. I mean, for me, it's the opposite. Like if I'm going to have any off-axis torque or any wobble on a disc, it's not coming on a putter or mid-range. It's coming on a fairway driver or a distance driver. Just because I'm trying to hit those harder, like I'm gripping it harder. For me, I think a softer grip, like a fan grip or something, should enable you to get rid of some of that. I don't know. I haven't thought through it like that very much, but that's just, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at on it.
I would go get a disc like a Polecat, get a disc like a Bite, get some of these discs that are super slow and build up your fan grip to where it's coming out really smooth on that hyzer and just standing up and working and not having much wobble. Like I think that would be really a good way to kind of improve that by using even slower and more understable discs. Could be a way to help improve that oat, and we get rid of that oat.
Yeah. As far as the grips that I use, I do power grip on distance drivers and fairways, and kind of, it's not like a true fan grip. Like Eric's is the, like his fingers are pretty wide out there. Mine's more of kind of like a pinch grip. So it's fingers a little closer to the rim, but not power grip. I don't know. It's just what works for me. Then that's how I throw every mid range and every putter. I never power grip them, never fan them out.
I'll fan grip my super overstable discs a lot for like cheeky skip shot approaches too. Like Scepters and Kotare, it's like you like spin it out there and it's just pew, like goes like short around the corner, like really fun.
Yes, or into like a super super duper strong headwind. I love throwing a distance driver like that, just really soft, 300 feet, because you know like the speed axis stability there, so it's going to just rip over to the left. I love that.
I kind of that's something that I've been thinking about doing a little bit more. Like I was throwing a hole at University of Southern Alabama, I think is what it's called. It's called USA in Mobile. And my buddy was thinking I would throw a Scepter or a Dynasty on a forehand, but I went Destroyer, like a decently stable Destroyer. And I just like buttered it out smooth and flat, like hit it hard and just like pushed it out there. And I, you know, just trusted the angle. And the speed was what like really like barreled it way right and was able to get the birdie. But that was, he's like, I'm surprised you didn't go Scepter or Dynasty. And it was like, I'd have to work really hard with a nine speed on this 350 foot hole whenever I can go 70%, 60% Destroyer, good angle, and it's just going to get there. So using that disc speed for multiple things, for the stability and for the carry, I think are something that a lot of players could learn from.
Totally. I'm with you.
Totes.
Absolutely, Reese.
Totes. Did you guys catch any of the coverage of the Music City Open?
I
wasn't able
not.
To watch any this weekend. No. I saw the winners.
Did you see any, were there any highlights maybe on Instagram or anything that you thought were pretty crazy?
Two things I did hear.
I saw Marky ace the first hole. That's sick.
Oh, yeah. That's
first hole of the tournament. Just bangerang.
Jam, I'm winning the tournament.
Hey, anybody else ace this one? Anyone else get a one? Cool. Okay, I guess I'm on the box then.
Love it.
Go ahead, Eric.
I did That's see I there's supposedly a clock was pulled on Nico.
Ruh-roh.
During the round, he was taking too much time, and that he was being timed shortly after that. I heard there was some misplays on the course with some OBs, people trying to take casual relief but not getting the approval of the card from areas that weren't marked as casual relief areas, is what I've heard. So those were some of like the things that sucked, but you know, it was really cool to see kind of in the FPO side a battle, you know, a little bit where it coming down the stretch, it was between three different women for a while, and you know, Missy came out on top. And I think once Chris took the lead after round two, I kind of figured he was just going to get the job done. He plays
well with the lead.
He's too good. He's too good. He's not going to give you strokes.
Nah.
Just how it is. Like, you got, if you're going to beat Chris, it's you get a couple on him early whenever he's playing just, you know, a little slow out the gate, and then you go on a streak. Like, that's how you have to beat Chris. Like, you have to get really, really hot. Like, you can't just expect Chris to play mediocre, because he's going to play good every time. And if not, like, good is his low. Like, that's the part about it. Like,
he's gonna go shoot a 10-30 absolute minimum.
Yeah, for sure. It's just going to be good enough. And then if he's playing really well, it's like, yeah, cool. I lost to Chris by five and I shot 10-30.
Right. Yeah, I played well. Oh, he shot 1080. Sick.
Yeah. Cool. So.
Okay. So some people were saying that Jeff Spring came to the card and was timing him for a while. Only called him because he took 52 seconds one time and gave him a warning. He was over the 30 seconds, so many more times than that.
Interesting.
I'm not surprised. It's a thing that needs to continue to happen to keep people online, because if you know you're playing with players who take excessive time or do things, we are in the place where we have to be the guys who call the rules, because that's what we're supposed to do. I could complain and come up with a million reasons as to why we shouldn't be, but in the current state of affairs, until the PDGA decides to change the rules, we are the people who have to do those things. What I have the plan for is if I'm on the road and I see a rules infraction, I might call it. If there's an issue with this, I might give a warning. And then if it continues to happen, I will have Jeff Spring and or any of the Pro Tour staff who can help solve the issue. I will call them and get them there. And then I will stop thinking about it so I can continue to play my round. Because I think that's the issue, is that we are in the situation where all I'm thinking about is my game. I'm not trying to think about Nico's game, but I have to think about Nico's game because he's taking too much time. So it's a really tough line that we have to play in. But the only way Nico is ever going to learn is if we say, hey, Nico, it's a time violation.
Well, yeah, he's just going
to
keep.
How else is he supposed to speed up?
Why wouldn't he keep going unless he got called on it?
Exactly.
Yep.
And I'm
not saying that he's right in doing. I'm just saying, why would he stop if no one's saying stop? No one's saying.
There are times where I may not notice it. I might just be like off to the side while he's doing his thing, chatting. I'm just checking my phone or for scores or making fun of stuff with Zach Melton or something like that. Just like being an idiot. I might not notice the exact amount of time he's taking, but it would just be good for us to be a little bit more aware, because it can cause flow problems on the course where it now doesn't begin to affect our card. It's something that can affect
everybody,
the rest of the field, because in most cases, the cards that are behind you, not as much in front of you, I guess it would be the thing, because there have been times where I think I was at Maple Hill. I played on a card. I don't need to say the names, but I threw my drive on 18 because you can't really see the people on 18's tee pad. I threw my drive and I was like, oh, that's all right. And the crowd erupted. because they hadn't seen somebody throw a tee shot on 18 for 45 minutes.
Wow.
Ooh.
So my card played that slow. And I had a player on the card who is notoriously slow. So that was one of those situations but it was also raining, but then he took a lot of extra time. So it was like, all right, cool. I'll give you an extra 20, 30 seconds because of rain. But then he took that 20 or 30 seconds and took an hour.
Michael friggin' Johansson, dude. That guy.
Takes forever.
Talk about dragging it out on the box.
Elijah Brady, I do need a Halo Polecat. I have not tried it, and I am very... I was actually going to play the Polecat World Championships that are happening in California and San Francisco this season. And I was going to say, man, if I win the Polecat World Championships, Innova has to make the Halo Polecat. But they did already. So I'm already like, there goes that pipe dream, but it's still not going to keep me from not playing the Polecat World Championships. You bet your butt I'm going to go play that thing. And if I win it, I might try and
call him
work
up.
Something out and be like, yo, look it up. Let's do this.
We'll see.
Nice.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you for sending those questions. Make sure you keep sending those questions in to discgolfanswerman.com so we can get them on the air. Also, if you want to be a supporter, we'd love to have you. Discgolfanswerman, patreon.com/DGAM. You can select different tiers to get episodes early and just help us out with some of the technical fees that we pay to have this on the show. Any parting words from you gentlemen? Anything big going on?
Stay tuned for more videos. Is that good stuff on the way?
You were trying to steal the name of my show, weren't you?
What?
Is that right disc right for you? You're trying to steal the name of my show. I'm teasing.
What? No, I was gonna say, is that good?
Oh, is that good?
Because that's the name of my series. Yeah, just stay tuned. I love you all, and I'm excited to be playing Frisbees again. So it's gonna be great.
I appreciate it. All right, we're signing off, guys. Appreciate it so much. And Bill, if you're listening, I apologize, but you know,
Bill,
you
hurry
know
up.
Who you are. You know who you are.
Yeah, hustle up,
Bill.